loving what is. Today I'm going to be chatting about chapters 2, 3, and part of chapter 4. But as usual, before we get started, let's close our eyes if we're in a space where it's safe to do so. And let's take a nice deep belly breath. Good work, my friends. Okay, let's talk about chapter 2, The Great Undoing. So Katie starts out this chapter by mentioning the criticism of the work that she hears most often, which is that it's just too simple. People say, freedom can't be this simple. And I answer, can you really know that that's true? I love this. Because Katie's not defending, she's not coming up with a 10-point argument with data points, you know, explaining why her process is valid. She's just responding with the simple question, can you really know that that's true? Which puts the ball back in our court and gets us back into our business instead of her business or God's business. That's what the work is about, right? Learning to stay in our own business and determine our own truth for ourselves. I love these lines from the bottom of page 12. Quote, when you do the work, you see who you are by seeing who you think other people are. Eventually, you come to see that everything outside you is a reflection of your own thinking. You are the storyteller, the projector of all stories, and the world is the projected image of your thoughts. You see who you are by seeing who you think other people are. In other words, our thoughts about other people tell us a whole lot about ourselves, not about the other people, about ourselves. Have you ever heard the saying, what you think about me is none of my business? Same story, right? Similar message here. And I'm wondering for you, for me, like, what if we could go about our day-to-day lives truly believing this? Truly knowing that other people's perceptions of us have nothing to do with us. That's their business. Unless, of course, their perceptions or what we guess to be their perceptions bring up stressful thoughts for us. Well, then that part becomes our business. But can you see how it's not their thoughts that are your business? Rather, it's your thoughts about their thoughts that are your business. I know that's a lot of words going in circles, but does that make sense? For example, let's say you just got a new haircut. And someone comes up to you and says, you know what, I liked it better the way it was before. Well, most of us would probably see that as a rude thing to say. But when we have a consciousness of the work, we can be like, okay, well, that's their business. That is their thought about how they prefer my hair. Cool. That's all their stuff. It has nothing to do with me. But if their comment bothers me, if it brings up defensiveness or self-consciousness or anything like that, well, then that part, there's my business, right? And that's where I can do the work if I want to. And I don't know if that feels really clear to me now, clearer in a different way than it ever has been before. Maybe it does for you too. What someone else thinks of your haircut, your clothes, your life, your partner, your anything, your work, that's their business. Their thoughts about how they prefer you to live your life. Whatever, it's their stuff. Has nothing to do with you. Unless it bothers you, their thoughts bother you, and then that's where your business comes in. If this doesn't make sense, don't worry about it. Hopefully it will as we start to continue to dive into the book. So another way of putting it, as Katie does as the chapter goes on page 13, she says, what the work gives us is a way to change the projector, mind, rather than the projected. It's like when there's a piece of lint on a projector's lens. We think there's a flaw on the screen, and we try to change this person and that person, whomever the flaw appears to be on next. But it's futile to try to change the projected images. Once we realize where the lint is, we can clear the lens itself. This is the end of suffering and the beginning of a little joy in paradise. So in my previous example about someone saying they don't like your haircut, this is, the work is moving from, they shouldn't have said that. Why would they say that? Maybe my haircut is bad. Maybe I never should have actually cut my hair. You know what? I knew I shouldn't have listened to Bob when he said I should cut my hair. Man, I should go back and get it fixed. Or, well, fine. You don't like my hair? I don't like your hair. I don't like your clothes. I don't like your face. Like, all the things that our minds can do. What if we could look at those reactions and, okay, get curious about what those comments are showing us about ourselves and how those comments are actually here potentially as pathways to our own freedom? Because in an ideal world, if we are completely free, someone could come up to us and say, I don't like your hair. I don't like your clothes. I don't like how tall you are. I think you should weigh less. I think you should color. You should get work done on your face. I don't know, like all these things. People could say all of it. And if we're completely free, we wouldn't be bothered by any of it. Is that a radical thought? I like it. I like it because it gives me the power to be the instigator to find the pathway to my own freedom instead of leaving it in someone else's hands. When we turn the mirror back on ourselves, well, there's the path because I am the only person I can control. If my freedom depends on everyone else doing exactly what they think they should, what I think they should, well, then yikes, it's going to be a rough ride. Right? Okay, so moving on page 14, Katie advises us to please avoid the temptation to continue without writing down your judgments. And I actually have a personal story or slash confession to make on this point. As you probably saw in my emails about loving what is before we started, Katie has been a very impactful teacher for me, and her worldview has had a big influence on me. This is my second time reading Loving What Is, and I've also read A Mind at Home with Itself and A Thousand Names for Joy. And as I mentioned last week, I also attended an afternoon in-person workshop with her. And all of these things have had a big impact on me. But what I realized as I read chapter 2 again is that I have actually sat down and filled out a worksheet. I have only done that a handful of times. So Katie's influence on me has been more about the consciousness of the work. Like, I do feel like the consciousness of the work has settled into my psyche to some extent. But I haven't done that much of the work itself a handful of times and not really recently until this, you know, going back to the book now with the book club. And that's fine. You know, there's nothing bad or wrong about that. But now here I am, and here's this opportunity to give myself more experience in actually doing the work, right? Exactly as she lays it out. And so as I continue to read this chapter where she describes the whole process in chapter 2, and then she says, okay, now your turn. Well, okay, I followed along and obligingly did as she asked. And the whole thing, right? Put down my judgmental thoughts, went through numbers 1 through 6, was petty, did not try to be kind or spiritual. And I was amazed, really, at what it, the insight it brought up for me. So I won't go through the whole thing, but I'll share kind of a couple highlights. So, for example, on the worksheet for number 5, which is the question, what do you think of them, the other person in the situation? I wrote, and I'm changing the person's name here for privacy, but I wrote, Sally is immature. Sally is not living up to her potential. Sally is a complainer who is stuck in victim mentality. Sally is deficient as a friend. Remember, I'm not trying to be rational and kind. I am trying to be petty and judgmental, as these thoughts really are. And I saw this time through, like, oh, the value in really following that advice. So then there's the whole process of who am I when I believe this thought or these thoughts? And the answer is that I'm judgmental. I distance myself from Sally. I'm conditional in my love for her. I criticize her in passive aggressive ways. I show her with my behavior that I don't believe she's good enough. Yikes. So then I turn it around and I say I instead of Sally, right? So I am immature. I am not living up to my potential. I am a complainer who is stuck in victim mentality. I am deficient as a friend. And then I see it. It's so obvious. I'm over here thinking I'm all enlightened in my opinions about Sally, when what this whole practice is truly showing me is my own immaturity. Right? These thoughts are coming from an immature, judgmental part of me. So Sally's not immature. I'm immature. And then when I believe these thoughts, I'm clearly not living up to my potential, because I know my potential to see and accept and love people is bigger than this. Right? I know that. I am a complainer, stuck in victim mentality. Well, I'm over here keeping myself busy by being in Sally's business, bemoaning how she's showing up, wishing she were different, feeling sorry for myself because I have to be around her when she is a complainer stuck in victim mentality. Well, it's hilarious, right? When you start to see it, whew. And then there's this last one. I am deficient as a friend. Well, clearly, what kind of friend am I with thoughts like these? It's not that Sally's deficient. It's not that she's doing anything wrong. Look at me. I'm immature. I'm not living up to my potential. I'm not living up to the person that I claim to be, that I spend so much time working towards being. I do passive aggressive things to show her that I don't think she's good enough. Pretty sure those are signs of being deficient as a friend. And the cool thing is, I don't know if this is the case for everyone, but like when I did it yesterday or the day before, and then now that I'm sharing it with you, I'm not feeling shame upon having these realizations. It's kind of like, oh, and it's kind of funny, and it's kind of like, wow, okay. And then the realizations start to settle. Oh, wow, that feels actually really true. Much truer than my original thoughts. Oh, I see it. I see it. And like I said last week, when we truly see it, it's like we automatically take our hand off a hot burner without having to stop and think about it. Our behavior starts to change. I get it. It's pretty cool. It is pretty cool. I'm sort of awakening yet again to like, wow, this the work thing is a pretty cool tool to have in your toolbox. So obviously those are just the highlights, but hopefully hearing it was helpful for you, because doing it was certainly helpful for me. So going back to Katie's advice to write it down, I agree. I am certain I wouldn't have gotten the same insight from it had I tried to do it in my head. As Katie says, if you try to do the work in your head without putting your thoughts on paper, the mind will outsmart you. Before you're even aware of it, it will be off and running into another story to prove that it's right. But though the mind can justify itself faster than the speed of light, it can be stopped through the act of writing. Once the mind is stopped on paper, thoughts remain stable, and inquiry can easily be applied. So, I feel excited when I think about how much more freedom I potentially can discover by regularly doing the work on paper. And this is why the book club is so valuable, right? Hopefully for you as much as for me. Like, oh, I haven't been using the tools in my toolbox to the extent I thought I was. Once I just really stopped to look at it, and then that prompted me to take integration, to take using the use of my tools to the next step. Cool. Okay, chapter 3, entering the dialogues. This is a super short chapter of just a couple of pages of stuff that Katie wants us to know before we dive into reading more dialogues. And the only thing here that I want to highlight is when she says that the work does not condone any harmful action. This is good to keep in mind as we continue, because some of the dialogues may go into areas where it can seem like the work is saying that harmful things are okay. But let's just take Katie's reminder here to heart, and if that does come up for us, to inquire about it, to breathe with it. And this is as much for you as for me as for you, because there are still some things around this where my mind struggles too. It's hard for some of the, you know, some of the harder, harsher, more traumatic experiences that human beings can have. Those ones can be a little tougher to apply the work to and to feel okay with it. And let's see, like perhaps more freedom awaits us. Time will tell, and the truth may be different for each and every one of us. Okay, so now let's talk about chapter 4, doing the work on couples and family life. I love how Katie starts this chapter. Quote, "My experience is that the teachers we need most are the people we're living with now. Our spouses, parents, and children are the clearest masters we could hope for. Again and again, they will show us the truth we don't want to see until we see it." Yes, I realized this in a new way recently upon applying the work to some judgments I was harboring against my husband. Those will always come up in a marriage, right? In any close relationship, our mind will come up with some judgments, some things to complain about, some ways we wish the other person could be different. And applying the work, wow, like to those judgments, it really helped me to see how much of a teacher my husband is for me and how any points of tension between us are doorways into discovery of new truths about myself. So all that to say, yeah, Katie, that makes sense to me. And the reading assignment for this chapter was through the second dialogue. So we didn't do all of chapter 4 just because that would have been more pages than, you know, trying to divide it up kind of evenly-ish as much as possible throughout from week to week. So this week we have the two dialogues of I Want My Son to Talk to Me and My Husband's Affair. And if you haven't read these yet, I encourage you to do so in the way that Katie suggests, which is slowly and looking for your own answers as you do. And if you're listening to the audiobook, I don't believe that these dialogues are on it. So this is a tricky thing. Not the new audiobook, but the abridged version doesn't have these dialogues. The abridged version does have actual recordings of real dialogues of some of the ones in the book, but not all of them. So just keep that in mind if you bought the abridged version of the audiobook. So I think the dialogues speak for themselves. And there's only one thing here that I want to comment on, which is on page 55, when Katie says, "If I think that someone else is causing my problem, I'm insane." And Marissa says, "I see. So we cause our own problems?" And Katie responds, "Yes, but only all of them." She's so cheeky. So, if I think that someone else is causing my problem, I'm insane. It's quite the statement there, huh? How does it land for you? Does resistance come up? Maybe if it does, that's okay. Or perhaps you feel a sense of freedom, because if we are the cause of our problems, then we also are the solution to our problems. I don't know. Whatever comes up for you, cool. There's no right or wrong here. But of course, Katie might say if thoughts around that statement that come up, if thoughts feel stressful, well, then maybe that's something to apply the work to. Ask yourself, can you really know that that's true? Okay, so let's talk calls to action. This book, it is very clear cut, the calls to action. This time, this week, your CTA is to follow the instructions in Chapter 2 to complete a worksheet and then go through the process of inquiry. So there's great instructions. Just go through it exactly as she says. I would recommend having the book as a companion next to you as you do the worksheet. I didn't have a worksheet. I just did the questions on a piece of paper. Because she does ask, explain the questions a little bit more and provide a little bit of context that is helpful, I think. At least it was helpful for me. So follow along with the book, do a worksheet, go through the process of inquiry, do the work, and see how it goes. Try to go into it without a lot of expectations. As Katie says in the end of the chapter, if you do it and you don't feel like it gave you anything or didn't have the result that you thought it might, don't worry about it. Sometimes it might work on us in ways that are more subconscious. And also, as with everything, you get to figure out your own truth for yourself. So you might go through this book, you might try the work a few times, and you might be like, yeah, this just doesn't land for me. And if that's the case, cool. That's allowed. You get to decide for yourself what your own truth is. And I like the way that Katie says that we can know the truth is, she always says, I wouldn't call myself enlightened. I'm just someone that knows the difference between what hurts and what doesn't. So if you agree, maybe the truth is, are the thoughts that don't hurt. Maybe. Man, I'm so excited that you all are here with me. As always, thank you for listening. Thank you for being on this journey of learning how to love what is, along with the book club. I will talk to you next week. Bye.